Hi, Gwenny. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm doing good. Doing pretty good.
Good.
How are you?
I'm good. Maybe since I think this might be the first or one of the first times that listeners are hearing you, maybe you could introduce yourself and say what you do on the show or what you've been doing.
Yeah. So my name is Gwenny Govea. My full name is actually Guinevere, but everybody calls me Gwenny. And I'm an intern here at Stitcher, and I'm working on the Atlas Obscura podcast.
And where are you based?
I am based in Houston, Texas right now.
That's awesome. I've always, you know, it's funny. I've been to Texas a bunch of times. I've been to Austin. I've been to El Paso. I've been to Dallas, Fort Worth a bunch of times. I've never been to Houston. And it's always kind of seemed like, I mean, this is, I apologize in advance, but like Dallas, Fort Worth is okay. Like, I always felt like Houston was the cool, was like a cool, big Texas city. You know, I don't know. There's like interesting stuff that there's like an art car parade or like a funerary museum. Like there's just a bunch of stuff I've always wanted to see there. Do you check out any of that like Atlas Obscura type stuff when in the city?
Yeah, I actually recently went to this house in Houston. It's a place that's pretty famous here. Mm. They always feature it on January 24th, which is National Beer Can Day on the news. And what it is it's this house completely covered in beer cans. And it's really something to see.
I would love to learn more about this and possibly be involved in making my own. Please take us there.
Sure. I'm Gwenny Govea, and this is Atlas Obscura, an exploration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. Today, we're going to a beloved but unusual landmark that's just very, very Houston. When you drive up to the beer can house, you are surrounded by these really tall, pristine white townhomes and this really cute, sort of gentrified pink apartment building. And it's the Rice Military neighborhood, so it's very high-end, very, you know, fancy. And then as you're driving by it, you notice this little tiny 1938 mid-century bungalow, and it's shiny. It looks like a sparkly New Year's Eve dress in the sun, and it's completely covered in what looks like aluminum and what looks like Christmas tree tinsel. But when you look closer, it's actually beer cans is what you're seeing. The entire house is covered in beer cans.
And it sounds like there's even, you said tinsel. Does that mean beer cans have been like cut into ribbons?
Yes, actually, there are parts of the house where beer cans have been cut into little ribbons and they make wind chimes. And those are like on little mounds of concrete that are surrounding the house as well. So it's, there are a bunch of different like sort of little sculptures around the house as well, also that come from different parts of beer cans.
I'm finding that the name of this house is actually quite accurate.
Yes.
Okay, so the beer can house is covered in beer cans, but they give tours. You can go inside of it. What is that like?
Yeah, so the inside of the house is actually surprisingly pretty normal, and it looks like you stepped into the 1940s.
Here, let's look in here, and I'll show you some of the stuff inside the house.
That's Pete Gershon. He showed me around the beer can house and gave me a tour of the place.
We've kept the inside pretty much intact. It looks much the same as when the Milkovich family lived here. I'll pause before. The original color scheme, you know, this hasn't changed.
So Pete actually wrote a book about the beer can house and visionary art in Houston. So he knows a lot about the place, and he knows a lot about John Milkovich, who's the guy that made it.
He just liked to drink beer. It was a fun, he liked it.
Yeah.
He had a huge beer belly to match. I think it's quite obvious.
And he saved all these cans. He grew up during the Depression, right? And, like, learned to never throw anything away. So he was hoarding these flattened cans in the attic here and in the attic of his mom's house, saving them up in bundled stacks, knowing someday he was going to use them for something.
What kind of beer are we talking about here?
Yeah, there are actually a lot of different types of beer around the house. Some of them don't exist anymore, but there's Texas Pride, Coors. I think I saw a Bud Light.
Uh-huh.
There's one called Stella something. I don't know beer very well.
Stella Artois, I think. Yeah.
And there's a pretty broad range. As a matter of fact, the ones you see out here that are a little bit yellow and say 96 on them, this was apparently some kind of low-cal beer that his wife Mary liked to drink. So if you saw this in 1982, you would have seen a eye-popping patchwork of reds and blues and greens and like every color. But you can see the sun will just zap all the reds out. Really, all that's left is yellows, some blues. A little bit of this kind of gold color.
But, like, this whole house is entirely covered in beer cans. Quick question. Do you know how many beer cans there are on the house? Like, a rough estimate?
I believe there are 50,000. Yeah.
Okay. So this is, like, actually kind of a monumental project. Like, how did he actually go about covering the house? Did he start with the roof? Did he start with the walls? How did it work?
Yeah, well, Pete was able to show me a lot of the original tools that John used. And so I got to see firsthand sort of the process behind it.
He would fashion a 2x4 foot panel out of several cans. He would tape these things together, but he would also, with a punch, which I believe is this strange tool with the teeth on the end of it, I think he used that to kind of stab holes into it that he could then wire or rivet these things together and then apply to the house. There's a moisture barrier behind all the can panels, so there was at least that amount of forethought to it.
The whole thing sort of took a lot of trial and error, and it took about 20 years for him to complete the whole entire house.
This is kind of like, this was sort of like part of his life's work.
Yeah, exactly. No, after he retired, he just went ahead and did this whole thing, and it was his whole project. He drank a 6-pack of beer every day. I didn't even think that he knew why he did it, and he knew why he sort of covered his house in beer cans. There's a quote in his house. It says, "Sometimes I lie awake at night trying to figure out why I do it."
I like this kind of outsider or visionary art, where it is really just responding to, like, an innate human desire to change your environment, to sort of make it special, make it yours, make it unique.
Yeah.
Like, I vibe with that so deeply. And I think it's like a lot of people in that world, they don't think of themselves, they certainly don't think of themselves as fine artists. And even just, it's sort of just like, I just do it because it's the thing that seems like what I should do. I just want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you can see that in a lot of the different art that he has in and around his house. There are a bunch of, like, strange signs in the house as well that he made out of beer cans.
He made, these used to be out on the curb, these planter boxes that he would put these sayings on that don't necessarily mean anything. Yes, we kit. You know, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. He just wanted people to be confused and think it meant something and drive themselves crazy trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
How did his wife feel about this? How did his family feel about it?
Yeah, I don't think his wife was a fan, from what I've been told.
That's a fairly large marital issue you got on your hands there.
Yeah. No, something that was so funny that Pete told me was that the way that John built the house, it was like he did it row by row, and he put these flattened beer cans around the house very slowly, almost so that his wife, Mary, did not notice it happening as it was happening. But eventually...
The old frog in the pot trick, until suddenly you're like, wait, my whole house is covered in beer cans. Something's happened.
Yeah, exactly.
I imagine she caught on at some point.
Yeah, yeah. And that's actually the reason why the whole interior of the house is so normal, because she wanted a space for herself.
This is classic marital work here. This is your zone. This is my zone. Never shall the twain meet. Okay, it makes sense.
Yes.
And what about his neighbors? Like, he lived in, like, a normal street. The house is, like, not way out in the boonies or something. How did his neighbors feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think his neighbors can complain now because it's a landmark. But
right.
I imagine, you know, the beer cans just singing in the wind on windy days and making those sort of wind chime sounds, they do get pretty noisy. And Pete was able to recreate that sound for me. It wasn't a super windy day, but it was very loud. So I imagine they were not very happy.
I love that it's not just, I love that it's also acoustically aggressive. It's like, yeah, first off, the house is covered in beer cans. Second off, you can hear the beer cans when you're inside your own home. That's a power move. I assume John's passed away. He's no longer in the house. Is that right?
Yes, yeah, that's correct. He passed away in 1988, and then in 2002, after his wife passed, the Orange Show for Visionary Art, where Pete works, actually, they acquired the place, and they opened it to the public, and they take care of it now, and they sort of keep up with maintenance of the house and things like that.
All of these kinds of things, whether it's roadside attractions or, like, giant dinosaurs built in the 30s, all the stuff built on Route 66, things like the beer can house, they're very challenging to preserve because they weren't built by people who necessarily were thinking about the long term. You know, oftentimes they were built with whatever was around, in this case, beer cans. Uh-huh. And so they present really interesting preservation challenges. And it sounds like that's the case with the beer can house.
Yeah, it's a pretty big effort by both the Orange Show and the whole Houston community.
And a lot of the canned top garlands that you see around here, these have been refabricated over time by volunteers. These things are very delicate and they're constantly being blown down in the wind. So, a site like this requires constant maintenance and upkeep. It will never be done. If people want to come in and spend a few hours on a Sunday afternoon, we got you covered. We can set you up. We can show you the right way to pull a weed.
Something like the beer can house can feel maybe, you know, I think when you first mention it to someone, sort of frivolous or even kind of trashy. But like having been there and seen it for yourself, what were your impressions coming out of it?
Yeah, well, I actually thought that it was very magical. Like it was a cool experience to be there. And I think that it holds a special place in a lot of people's hearts in Houston because it's so eclectic and so authentic. Another great part of it is the story behind John and just how authentic he is as a person. This is a very Houston story, and John was very Houston.
This guy was not trying to impress you. This guy was not trying to sell you anything. He was doing his own thing in his own yard. And no zoning Houston, where if you want to put a bunch of beer cans on your house, gosh darn it, nobody is going to tell you you can't put a bunch of beer cans on your house in Houston. And that's what he did. It's a real Houston tale, is what it is.
You can visit the Beer Can House and other Houston visionary art, including the Orange Show, by going to orangeshow.org. The house is open from 1 to 5 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. And a special thanks to Pete Gershon for touring me around the Beer Can House. Be sure to check out Pete's book about visionary art in Houston called Painting the Town Orange. Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Witness Docs. The production team includes
Dylan Therese,
Doug Baldinger,
Chris Naka,
Camille Stanley,
Willis Ryder Arnold,
Sarah Wyman,
Manolo Morales,
McKenna Smith,
Gianna Palmer,
Tracy Samuelson,
John Delore,
Peter Clowney.
Our technical director is
Casey Holford.
This episode was mixed by
Luce Fleming.
Our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tyndall. I'm Guinevere Govea. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
Witness Docs from Stitcher.